we're back. It's episode 27 on The Bounce Show right here from Johannesburg, South Africa. And listened to and watched by whoever you are in the world. That's always a nice thing to be able to say because we know there's people all around the world who get to the show every single week. We're always massively appreciative of that. Sandile, I have to comment on what just happened. I'm still shooketh from what actually just happened in the studio here.
Look, guys, better to tell the story. Like, strange things always happen on our show. And you'll see, because we're going to cut it, and you'll see exactly what happened. And then some lady, Palissa.
I mean, you might as well tell the story properly here. Yep. Now you're just butchering it.
No, go ahead.
So we're doing a big football show this week, right? Because, I mean, end of the year, the festive season's really great for football. When we're stuffing our faces and basically horizontal on a couch, footballers are going hard all the way through the festive season. So there's a guy that works with us in the greater office over here, a guy called Andrew. Probably one of the smartest folks I know when it comes to football. He always teaches me a lot of stuff. So I pulled him in. I was like, Andrew, really wants you to be a guest today. And he's like, cool, I'm in. Great guy. We literally just filmed with him for like 15 minutes. And then he got summoned out of here because he forgot that he had a pitch or something he's working on.
Pitch.
I mean, sorry, Andrew, I don't mean to throw you under the bus here, but I mean...
And then so many people walked in and out of studio. We've been shooting.
Yeah.
And then Palissa walks in. I'm not going to badmouth you again, Palissa. She walks in and she's like, well, we're in a dry run and we need this guy right now. We shoot him, by the way. And she's like, basically, on set. And me and Ben are like, okay, go on, Ben. Let's just get straight to it.
Yeah, so unfortunately, our football guest, who I was hoping to tee him up for lots of insights, he's not with us today. But that's okay because Sandile is obviously here with us. We're going to go very hard on that. But first...
It's a wild show.
You prep. But first, we need to get into just recap, of course, the big That's Gold moments from last week with Clip Drift. It was a really cool sporting weekend. I was at the Nedbank Golf Challenge, so I shouldn't get to watch as much sport as I wanted to. But I was there. I walked the front nine.
Oh, that's awesome, bro.
It was so hot.
How much beer?
That was in the afternoon, and I didn't really count, to be honest with you. So I was at the golf. I didn't get to watch a huge amount, but football was pretty good.
Football
was actually really good between Saturday and now. Yep. One of the big things, of course, Liverpool drop points at Newcastle.
Yep.
Great match. Spurs thought that they might actually win a game, but then they Spursed it. Yeah, they lost 4-3 to Chelsea.
Yeah.
Your team lost to Nottingham Forest, wasn't the biggest surprise. Arsenal dropped points to Fulham. So it was a really good, energetic sort of like exchange of games. Man City, they got a red card, dropped points to Crystal Palace. But for me, some of the other bigger That's Gold moments from the weekend was UFC.
Yep.
We knew Pantoja was going to be too strong, and he absolutely showed it. Mm-hmm. Got a second round win there. And then Shavkat Rakhmonov versus Ian Garry. Shavkat won. We all expected that.
But closer than we thought.
A lot closer than we thought. Hey, it suddenly looks a little bit more beatable.
Yeah.
Ian Garry is really good. I don't like him, of course, because he thinks that somehow he's going to win the welterweight title, then go to middleweight and win that as well. Got to get your first hurdle there, bud.
Not happening
at all. And in the rugby, it was a pretty shite weekend, actually, for the SA teams going into the Champions Cup.
And, you know, coming off last week, and we probably hammered the Sharks more than we should have, they actually showed up. And
well, the only one that got the win.
Yep, they're the only ones that showed up. I expected more from the Bulls, as you know, we in our analysis coming from last week, as a team that focuses on this tournament a lot. Surprised that they fell that short. That, you know, I know they've got a couple of players coming back into the system, but surprised that they came up that short.
Yeah, it was a bit rough. There was obviously fingers pointed in a variety of areas. We won't get into that. Mm. Storm has lost. The Sharks. That's pretty sad. But for me, the big That's Gold moment from the weekend was, and I know because I was there, Johannes Veerman. He was my That's Gold moment for the weekend because he won the Nedbank Golf Challenge. Ulrich Potkieder was charging. He was leading by 3 going into the final round. He made a double and a triple, but still had a chance to get into a playoff with a par on the 18th. Unfortunately, he missed out. The guy's only 20. He's an incredible talent. So great watching him. But this Johannes Veerman, nobody considered him at all. He was so under the radar. Nowhere. But he won it. I mean, this was the great thing about golf is that when the conditions are as tough as they were, okay, another reason why I love the Nedbank Golf Challenge this year is that they've had no rain. The golf course was so tough. It was so relentlessly tough because it was so dry. The greens were so quick. Those pin placements were actually mostly malicious. Now, Max Homer, he shot 6 under in the first round. He was great.
Yeah.
The winning total after 72 holes was -5. Those Oaks literally melted in the heat for the whole weekend.
You called it.
And Johannes got together. So here's our clip trip. That's gold moment from the week. His second DP World title. And I think only fitting, and as an American who's been given an Afrikaans name from birth, Johannes Veerman.
Shout out, Johannes, man.
Johannes, to win on SA soil, that is it. That is our big moment from last week.
Has he got any SA blood in him? There's no way his name is Johannes Veerman.
Could not have looked any less Afrikaans if he even tried.
Yeah. Yeah, no, shout out to him. And, you know, honorable shout out, Proteas.
Yes.
You know, we always slam them. Timber Bavuma played incredibly. Once again, you know, anytime Timber has got a lot of success, I'm going to back it, especially because I was one of those guys who told him to fuck off earlier in the show. But it's great to see somebody come back into form and actually play with a little bit of freedom. So I'm super happy for the Pro Tiers.
But now that you mention that, we've now, at the clean sweep of Sri Lanka, now puts us further ahead on top of that ICC Test World Ranking thing.
Yep.
Now, we tried to talk through the Test World Ranking table last week. I don't know if we did a very good job of it, but we'll try again. Wonder if you can just bring up the test rankings there. So we're number one. Now, the important thing to look out for here is the percentages, because we're never going to be able to play the same amount of games. South Africa, we've got two more tests to go. Okay, we've got Pakistan at home, who are currently the 7th-ranked team. Our current percentage there is 63.3. We have the chance to go to 69.44 if we win our next two tests.
Yeah.
Australia, they've got 5 more tests. They've got India for 3 more times at home, and then they go away to Sri Lanka away. They've got a chance of getting to 71.05%. So the reason I'm saying this getting two is because the top two teams go into the final next year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure it's played in Lords because they own the final.
Even if it's Australia and us.
Yeah, no, whatever it is, they always have a neutral venue.
Yeah.
And they'll probably piss with rain for 3 of those days. So India, they're currently on 57.29%. They're really salty at the moment that they're not going to get into this World Test final.
Yep.
If they do well and beat Australia the next 3 tests, they can get to a hypothetical 64.4%. So what they're doing is they're hoping that they do that and we absolutely get trousered by Pakistan. The funniest thing about this for me is that these teams are bitching that South Africa can now get to a final without having played the best teams.
And played less tests. Way less tests.
And you remember when we sent that B team to New Zealand?
Yep.
Because we were playing the T20s.
T20s, yeah.
So I think it's funny because it's come back to bite these guys now. They've played all these big tests. They've played their hard games. South Africa gets the scraps at the end of the table.
They need to fix that format.
But our scraps are getting us to the main thing.
Cricket South Africa and anybody in cricket, we as a Proteas will take it.
We will take it. I will have no problems taking that. So maybe that's the second that's gold moment for the week.
100%.
So we're going to talk big time football this week. Lots to break down because the festive season is just so full of fixtures. A lot's been happening as well. Of course, this week is match day 6 of 8 in the Champions League in that new format, which is looking even more bloated than we originally expected.
Weird going into Jan with so much called Champions League.
Yeah, it is a bit strange. Yeah. It is a bit strange. Another thing that's quite strange is that Real Madrid, defending champs,
having a shocker.
Not looking so great.
Having a shocker. Kylian is playing terribly, but you know what?
Well, he probably doesn't know where to play.
You know, he'll get better.
But maybe that's going to turn around the fortunes of Real Madrid. We are going to give away the home and away kit of Real Madrid. Yeah. So I know that you've noticed in the season so far, Sandile and I have been merched out. Adidas have given us some fantastic kit. They obviously are the manufacturers for our teams, Arsenal and Man United. But they also provide the amazing Real Madrid kits. I think universally their kit always is great. They're a huge team. Everybody loves a bit of Real Madrid.
Yeah.
So Friday on Instagram, on our social media posts, we're going to be putting something out. So look out for it. Engage with the competition post. We're going to be giving away an Adidas Real Madrid home and away kit to two lucky winners. Two viewers, watchers of the show, is like a little bit of a Christmas bonus.
Yeah.
So Friday on Instagram @_thebounce. Look out for the post with these kits and you could be the winner.
Yeah. And if you guys don't pick up the kits, I'll definitely take them off you.
Absolutely fair. If we don't have the right amount of entries or you don't get the mechanic just right, Sandila's going to take it.
100%.
Because trust me, he's already worked out that he's tired of wearing his kits. He's tired of wearing his Man United kits.
Whatever, man.
Anyway, big football show coming up in part 2. Join us after the break.
Introducing Heineken House. Open the door and step inside. Heineken House dropping January 2025. Not for persons under the age of 18.
Welcome back. As I said, episode 27. We're going deeper. We've still got two shows left this year.
Yep.
They're going to be pretty special shows too. So in the upcoming weeks, what we're going to do is we're going to do the On The Bounce Awards.
Yes,
where we take a whole bunch of categories with nominations. Look out for, obviously, the posts on social media too, so you can have your say on who you think the winners should be in these categories. And then we also got a On The Bounce Year In Review show.
No, we've been doing this for almost a year.
Because we don't want you to go like wanting in the festive season, right? We want to kind of tee you up so you don't miss this whatsoever, give you all the entertainment. And what I got to say is that the Year In Review show is going to be very interesting. I know this because I've gone through every single show
ben
this year.
Ben had to go through every single show. I said, fuck that.
I am so tired. I mean, my eyes, they're heavier than usual. I'm so tired, but the show is going to be totally worth it. So for the next few weeks, you will have fresh shows, and of course, we'll take you into the new year. So, the Premier League this season,
yep,
it's been very interesting. Before we get to looking at the log and all that kind of stuff, I just want to ask you, like a gut feel sort of thing, is this one of the more competitive Premier Leagues ever,
yep,
considering the fact that Man City's come back and a few other teams have almost come forward? Would you think that's a fair statement?
Yeah, I think, you know, Man City put such a high standard on the league before where they couldn't drop X amount of points.
Yeah.
And now it kind of feels like it's anybody's to kind of take. We're going back to that OG Premier League era where we'll see what happens after Christmas. You know, that's what everybody always used to say. Liverpool playing superb. Surprisingly, Chelsea. You know, we always thought that they've got a bloated team. They're not going to be able to pull it together.
Don't have a shirt sponsor. These are
As is always true with Chelsea Football Club, and I've seen it all through the years, they are never really favorites until they win the EPL. You know, so that's what's been super awesome. I think the demise of Man City is incredible. Like, we haven't seen a collapse like that in a while.
Well, since a Proteus batting performance.
Yeah, so that
Proteus-esque.
Yeah, so that is interesting. And for me, is what are the fortunes now with Arsenal Football Club? As we've everybody's seen, you know, it's Corner FC. You know, a cold night at the Emirates. I like that they're becoming such a set-piece driven team. It gives them another dimension. But we've always said the depth of that squad will be tested this season. And going into this bloated season of football and Champions League and Carling Cup and FA Cup, what is Michael Arteta going to do? And we see them when they drop points and when Odegaard gets hurt.
Or they just play away.
Yeah, you know, these funny things happen. But for me, I think that, you know, Liverpool and Chelsea, biggest surprise.
So, to quote our guest that was here for 5 minutes and then dropped a couple of absolute bangers and then had to leave, he made a good point in that everyone ridiculed Chelsea pre-season.
Yeah,
we about this whole money ball approach, the fact that they need three different team buses to get to a game.
Yeah.
But when you look at like the intensity you need to be a winner, you know, Man City's been all about intensity. I think Klopp during his best, you could identify them as being an intense team that could do so much. In order to be the best, you know, you cannot ever take your foot off the pedal.
Yep.
So Arsenal's squad's already been found wanting. I think there hasn't been enough guys to kind of step up. Man City, funny enough, have been found wanting.
Too much football,
not a good enough squad. Chelsea, though, they look fresh. They look energetic. Sure, they're not the best team. They're going to make some mistakes.
Yeah.
But they've got players. And I think they've got a system that they can feed into this kind of stuff with a lot of confidence.
And they play probably in the league the most entertaining football because they don't defend. They just go full out attack and they just say, we will beat you 4-3 or we'll beat you 5-4.
That Spurs game, I think if you look back at all the score lines, that's like actually one of the best games.
Yeah.
Just like Man United, Chelsea is one of the worst games. There's always boring draws.
Yep.
Chelsea versus Spurs is becoming this really amazing game.
Yeah, it's awesome, man. I really enjoyed that.
All right, let's have a look at the log, though. So, obviously, if you look at the log now, Liverpool got a game in hand. That's because the Merseyside derby, which I always hate calling it because
it's not a derby.
It's not really a big deal anymore. Everton are so inferior to where Liverpool are. I mean, geographically, it's one of the true derbies.
Yeah.
So, Liverpool have played 14, and they're on top with 35 points. Chelsea have now kind of snuck away a little bit from Arsenal. They've played 15 to get their 31.
Yeah.
Arsenal have only got their 8 wins, but the 2 losses and 5 draws give them 29. And then there's Man City. Sure, they are 8 points back, but they look further than that, eh? They just don't look... The drew to Crystal Palace now 2-2. Obviously, they were humbled by Liverpool recently before that.
Yeah.
They managed to get a win. Who did they beat in between there?
They won 2-0 this week, and Kevin De Bruyne came back. But here's my thing with Man City. And it's the strangest thing with Pep Guardiola. He really likes to play that marathon runner and never goes out the gate smoking. So it's not really that big a gap. For some strange reason, it's going to come. He'll be in and about there at the end of the season. It's just the Pep way, because historically, he's never led from the front. He always catches people, you know, towards the end of the tail.
As an Arsenal fan, I can vouch for that. There he was, just hanging in the shadows.
Just saying, like, no, it's not for us to win. And you know, Pep, as bad as we always say he's been, he's really not been that bad. It's just the standard that they've set for themselves. You know.
Fair point. Yeah. I mean, fair point. That's the whole thing. It's in sports. Everybody likes to say things in absolutes.
Yep.
We like to say things that are really salacious and tragic. They're 8 points back.
There's 23 games left in the season.
That's a lot. Rodri's still going to come back. What's the time frame on Rodri?
Look, they're saying that injury is super, super big, but they've got Kevin De Bruyne. They've got real ballers in that team. And it's a matter of time till they just look at each other and say, guys, what the fuck are we doing?
But is Rodri like season gone or just...
I think it's a deep, deep injury. They've said it's about 4 to 5 months.
From here or from when he went down?
So I think he had about a month and a half.
Okay.
But if, you know, depending if he doesn't pull a Luke Shaw and have a setback. But I also don't think Rodri is the end of be all of that team. You know, I think they'll find it.
Yeah. It's great to have those players you can base so much around, but it shouldn't be that way. You can't be that way, especially as you said, with the fixtures being what they are.
Yeah, and I just also want to give a lot of credit to Liverpool. We at the beginning of the season, we said they've got a new coach. It's the post-Klopp era. Mo Salah doesn't look like he's going to resign. And they've come out absolutely cooking. They're leading the league. They're playing great football. Even when their back's against the wall, you can never count them out. So they've really got a great system. And there's so many random players who just show up on that team that I never thought were that world-class. But they're jamming.
But they all look quite cohesive, and it looks like they've got presence as well.
Yeah.
So the race for the top four, if you go from Man City down, it's pretty interesting. We've got, I think it's Nottingham Forest. If we go back to the table there, Nottingham Forest in fifth. Now, they've beaten Man United. They've beaten Liverpool. They came in stuck against Arsenal. But they've got a good run there. I mean, 7 wins, 4 losses, 4 draws. They're on 25 points. Aston Villa started out looking like they're going to be a Champions League team this year. They started as a Premier League team.
And then
they're kind of balancing out now, also on 25. But then we've got the likes of Brighton, Brentford, Spurs, sort of, but not really. It's damn exciting. So when I say this is such an incredibly competitive season, it's really cool that there's the different dynamics, okay? Top four is not set in stone. Liverpool, do they have a squad to kick on? I don't know. Chelsea, how deep can they really go? Arsenal, can they actually not bottle it? There are so many cool sub-stories
here. That's for sure that they're bottling it. That's the one thing about the guarantee about Arsenal. They're not winning the league, guys. Just get it out of your mind right now. Manage your expectations going into the new year. What I was going to say, and going back to your point, is as bad as Man United have been this season, we're only 6 points behind Aston Villa. And that talks to about how competitive the league is again. You know.
So you left out there that they're 13th.
I said we're 13th, and we're 6 points away from it. We're 6 points away from it.
Just to reiterate the fact that Man United are 13th position with 19 points.
Oh,
that's 5 wins.
I'm really working on
4 draws, 6 losses.
Shucks, I'm working on my relationship with God because of Man United. Jeez, we've been so bad. I don't even want to get into it.
That's okay. So, I mean, I know we're in Champions League week as well, which always feels weird. We're not going to go into the games there because, you know, time of recording to times of the game being played. We can't really comment on much. But to look at we said at the beginning of the season, the Champions League's new format could be pretty exciting. In theory, it had some pros. I think we're trying to be optimistic. Yeah. We're being positive. But now when you look at things and go, there's just too many teams. This is shit.
Too many teams, too much football, random games.
Random games, far too many. So if you look at the log, okay, now we're going to look at it in two screens here.
Yep.
The top 12. Okay, Liverpool out front. Great. So everyone's played 5 games this point, right?
Yep.
Okay, so we've got Liverpool, Inter, Barca, Dortmund, Atalanta, Leverkusen, Arsenal, Monaco, Aston Villa, Sporting, although they're going to drop, seeing as you guys stole their coach. We got Brest and Lille. So these 12, okay, you need to get in the top 24.
Yep.
Top 24 means you stay in the tournament. That's now, if we go on, if we, I know, it's just it's like the World Test Cricket Championships all over again. Now, if we go from 12 to 24, Bayern, Benfica, Atletico, AC Milan, and then Man City, and then PSV, Juventus, Celtic. That's your top 20. From there, 21, Feyenoord, 22 is Brugge, Club Brugge. As Dynamo Zagreb are 23rd, and then Real Madrid are currently
hanging
24th,
on for dear life.
24th place in this bloated Champions League. 24th, they've won 2 out of 5 games.
Yeah,
you'd think they're going to bounce back. They've got far too many players not to.
Look, with, and I think it's testament for this new format is there's so much football now, and Real Madrid have always been able to manage their old players. They're struggling in La Liga. Well, they're fighting for in La Liga, and now they're fighting on a second front, which is something they never usually used to do, have to fight on two fronts. Now their team is super stretched. You've got, we don't know how much more Luka Modric's got.
Are you saying that they're super stretched because of pure mileage on the clock here?
100%. Okay. And also a lot of players coming off Euros, coming off a long season, jumping back into it, and then you must still go into international break as well. So this is one of the issues that we did discuss earlier in a couple of shows about how much football we have. But I'm shocked that bottom half has got a lot of superstar teams. You know, they are really struggling with how much football they're playing. You know, Man City having to work on two fronts once again, having to field their best team once again. And then, Real Madrid. I don't want to blame Mbappe because I think he's unjustifiably had to take so much, you know, flack, even though he's been poor, but he can't defend, you know. So they've got a big issue in terms of transition of talent moving forward. But Ancelotti will figure a way through because that's who he is. At least even if he's 24th, he said, "I'll take that because now you got to beat me in the next round." But it's surprising that they're doing that badly.
Look, I know this and isn't Man City. I know this isn't the reason, but the Champions League has always been a kind of format where it's like, okay, we just need to get through our group,
and then figure it out,
yeah. And then we figure it out. With there being such an expanded kind of thing here, the games aren't all high stakes. Sure, the results aren't going their way. But they just need to get into that top 24. They know they're probably a good enough team that could play anyone in the knockouts and kind of knock them out.
Mm.
Do you think that that could be a factor with these Oaks? Is that they're just not really applying their mind like they've had to?
I think they haven't adjusted to how much football they play. I think that's, you know, they're so used to switching it on. And then maybe some games they don't have to switch it on. Now they're chasing for every single point now because they kind of can't have any gaps because below them is also interesting. You've got PSG. You've got Leipzig. Yeah,
but everyone's given up about PSG, haven't
they? No, but I'm just saying you've got teams that have been historically gone through to the next round. And all this format has shown is if I win 2 or 3 games, I'm in the mix. So they've got to give themselves a bit of room because if they draw or drop 2 games, they're actually in trouble because PSG, Leipzig, it's going to be awkward if they don't make it to the next
round. True, there's a bit of firepower below them. So there's 3 more, including this week. We've got 3 more games that they're all going to play.
Yeah.
But there's something else I can really say on that. I think the format isn't going to be that great when you consider that there was the draw for the World Club. World Cup draw.
We still got to deal with that.
I'm sorry, but it wasn't in the prep. We're going to do so much on this show.
100%.
So that's come out as well. These same teams that we're mentioning here, plus Sundowns, they're in that as well.
Yeah.
So they are so stretched on so many fronts.
Yeah.
And we've said this 3 or 4 times on the show. Nobody, no football fan in the world, I don't think, has asked for more games.
Yeah, we've just asked less.
No one has ever asked for more games, FIFA, UEFA, FIZ.
And like, guys, and then we still got that other international tournament, the UEFA international tournament. It's just too much. Literally, and you can see it with the quality of play in Europe. The injuries now that are happening. You know, Rodri won a Ballon d'Or, but he was the first guy to say, guys, there's way too much football. There's not enough breaks. It's compromising the entertainment value of sport. And like, look, guys, we understand it's a money grab, but it's going a bit way too far now.
Just to kind of like put a bottom line on this part of the show then. So Chelsea are visionaries because...
I'm not going to give them all of that.
Because Chelsea understood from the start that they need X amount of players. And that's now good. Maybe that's the new formula for how football works.
And you know what? I want to be a hater on what Chelsea have done. But they clearly read the book because The reason a lot of these big teams aren't making it is because they don't have inflated weight. Chelsea can just replace a winger with a world-class player. That's literally all they're doing and building up for championship football. For if somebody gets hurt now, next man up. So it's interesting. That's a good way to look at it.
Final question on the squad. When I say Chelsea's got like the 60 player or whatever, I was exaggerating earlier.
72.
How many of them are actually at Stamford Bridge or how many of them are on loan to other clubs?
So look, they've got 40.
And also, like, just please remind me how this works. You have all these players, you know, not a lot of them are going to get first team. You can then hire them out to other people. Yep. Is that how it works?
Yeah, so you can have in your first team, they've got the biggest first team in football. I think it's about 63 players, first team. But
now, do they wake up on a Monday and put a Chelsea tracksuit on?
No, not all of them. I think 23 of them are on loan. There's some players I forgot that were signed with Chelsea. So they've got, even with that, they've got at least 3.5 starting lineups. So they've got 33 plus change, you know, on that team. You know, we've made ridiculous jokes about it, but looking at what we've seen now, I think it's good. I think it's good for them. And they're playing in that random European Conference Cup.
Yeah, that conference whatever it is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Weird thing. So they've got to go play on a Tuesday randomly in Zagreb or wherever. Then still come for EPL. Then still play another EPL game on Sunday. And then a Carabao Cup. And then, oh my goodness. So I think, you know what, I'm going to give it to them. They'll probably win Visionary Board of the Year. If the award is there for the next episode.
Fair enough. Okay, so look, we're about to go into mid-December here, which is great for everybody because that's when the holidays kind of get going. Yeah. Holidays do not happen for the major teams. So let's just have a look at the sort of festive season breakdowns here. Now,
I wonder if I'm still regarded as a major team.
No, you don't make the next few slides, unfortunately. So what I've got here is like the top four teams in the Premier League, just to give you an understanding of like what's happening now. So if you look at Liverpool, they'll obviously make up that game with Everton somewhere along the line. Yeah. Why wasn't that played, by the way?
I have absolutely no idea. I think Everton are going through the most, but apparently it was weather-related.
Oh, okay.
No, it's weather-related.
All right, so if you look at Liverpool during the festive season, okay, 14th December, they got Fulham. Then they're still in the English League Cup.
Yep.
So they'll play Southampton on the 18th. Then we got Tottenham for them on the 22nd. Leicester on the 26th. West Ham on the 29th. And then a little bit of a break for the festive season-ish. Man United, 5th of Jan. So we got six games for Liverpool between 14 December and 5th of Jan.
But that was traditionally how, you know, Boxing Day fixtures and that season was. And that's because everybody's at home, everybody's with family, and you can sit around a TV and watch that. That was completely reasonable. All this other craziness, I don't know what we did.
No, for sure. I mean, at no stage are we saying that what these fixtures are we showing you right now is the problem. It's the fact that it's top and tail by all kinds of other stuff, international breaks, Champions League, and that kind of crap. Mm. Let's get a look at Chelsea's fixtures here, because you mentioned they're in this conference thing as well. Mm. Okay. So for Chelsea's fixtures, wonder if you just bring back the same slide there, thanks. So they got Brentford in the league, 15th of December. Now, Brentford, dark horses for the top four. Then we got Shamrock Rovers. They're playing on the 19th. So that UEFA conference league thing. And then they got Everton, 22nd December. Fulham, 26th December. Ipswich, 30th. Crystal Palace, 4th of Jan. So that's a pretty good fixture list for a team that's looking to make a bit of a jump on the leaders.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, you can get into the fact that like they'll have an easier run. I think Arsenal don't have the strongest either. Yeah. Liverpool have got some tough games there.
Sure.
They've got some tough games because come 5th of Jan, Man United are going to be pretty, like, something. I think, more cohesive with the new coach and stuff.
I agree with you.
I'm not just saying it to make you feel better.
But I appreciate you.
I would rather play Man United on the 14th of December than the 5th of Jan.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that Tottenham game, I'm thinking about Tottenham, they're going to show up for big games, which is wild to say. Van Nistelrooy's Leicester.
And you reckon Spurs are going to keep the same manager through the face of the season?
Doubt it.
He's going to get the flick quite soon.
He's going out, if not tomorrow.
All right, so now look at the other two teams in the top four. Of course, we've got Arsenal and we've got Man City. So we said now that Chelsea's fixture list isn't going to be the most difficult, so they can get a chance to bring some points up. If you look at Arsenal's fixtures, I feel the same way, really. Everton the 14th of December. Now, Crystal Palace in the Carabao Cup there on the 18th. Then Crystal Palace straight away again 3 days later on the 21st of December. So Crystal Palace, they are a bit of a bogey side for a lot of teams. They took Man City to a draw. But you got to think that...
And they beat you guys last season. Let's not forget that.
They did drop points there as well. Yeah. So you think Arsenal's going to do pretty well here. Then Ipswich, they've been shite. They're a lower league team. That's 27 December. Brentford on the 1st of Jan, New Year's Day. What a way to kickstart a revival. And then Brighton, 4th of Jan. Brighton are a good team.
Yeah, we know so, Brighton stay killing people. They just stay randomly breaking people's hearts.
They're a major bogey team. So I would say Arsenal's got a relatively difficult kind of fixture list when you look at where Brentford and Brighton are right now. And then Man City. You know, we said, like, sure, they're in crisis. They've got all these other really bad words attached to them. 8 points back. Their festive season's got Man United, 15th of December. The big Manchester derby.
What a time to play Man City, man. I can't wait.
Aston Villa, 21st. That's also another tough game. Yeah. Everton on the 26th. Leicester on the 29th. And then West Ham on January 4th. So if they can just get to Christmas... I think the fixture list opens up a little bit for them. Of course, they're not in the Carabao Cup, so they're playing one less game over the festive season as well.
Yeah, I think for them it's going to be a big statement. What's their intention especially for the EPL? Because if they drop two of those games, they're pretty much out, according to their standard.
I think as well, with everything happening around them, they drop two of those games.
Pep out?
No, completely. Well, not Pep out, because I don't think there's too many great managers going around at the moment. That's another thing. We've got to look at... Sorry, just to kind of wrap it up there, is that there is so much happening in the Premier League, and we're obviously mindful of that. CAF Champions League's happening right now as well.
Yeah,
I know it's never going to be as exciting, the big enough draw card to really compete with that, but there's still some things happening in the African continent which are really cool. Yep. So let's just quickly recap from last weekend. We said that if Pirates could somehow get a sneaky 3 points here against Al Ahly, go away on that leg and sneak a draw, what did they do? They got the draw at home.
They got the draw at home. So they tied now with Al Ahly.
Okay, so that's not a good thing.
It's not bad.
But not the worst.
It's not the worst, because if they drop the points to Al Ahly, that group becomes wide open and everything to play for. You know, you've got, can never say this word, but CR Bellado's dad. That probably butchered it. They've 3 points. You know, they've got 3 points. Al Ahly's got four. And the Pirates have got four. But Al Ahly got a better goal difference.
Right.
So for them to get that point was essential, so they can go do the work everywhere else. It's that gamble that you do in tournament football. But my biggest concern, and just, you know, moving outside of Pirates, which who have done incredibly well, come back in CAF. We always know CAF is super physical. They don't necessarily have the most physical side, but they've been able to play the same football they've played in the league. Open, free-flowing, traditional South African football. But for me, the biggest concern is going to Sundowns now, because as we've shot this show, Coach Mangaba has been fired.
Oh, really?
Yep. Officially been fired. They had a press conference today at 1 o'clock, and they bring in a new Portuguese head coach. The big issue now, and they haven't decided in the press conference, is if they get rid of the technical squad, that's the end of the Pizzo era and Rulani era of that team, which has been such a fundamental, you know, cultural icon in African football. And everybody's seen starting at the bottom of that is going to be such a big issue, because one, we've got a Portuguese coach who's going to want to influence his culture.
It's a massive culture shift.
So I was shocked that, you know, the chairman made the decision so deep into the season. I thought he would have just run Mangoba to the end.
Yeah, so they had a draw of the weekend. Yeah. So when they took on AS Far.
Yeah.
It's a Moroccan team, right?
Yeah. But the problem is, and we thought they were going to win that game, they basically have gone to CAF and not won anything. They've got two draws.
Yeah.
So I think for him, and we also called it at the beginning of the season, I don't think Mangoba was going to have the same gravitas as a Rulani, as a Pizzo. And everybody thought that maybe Pizzo would come back, but it never really happened. And the CEO, the chairman, was not going to drop his standard of football. And I hope for Sundowns it works, because anytime there's regime change, that means there's going to be player changes and a whole technical staff going out. He's going to change the culture of Sundowns football. And I don't necessarily think that is a great thing for Sundowns, because they've played a certain way for such a long time. And ultimately, I think it affects our national team as well, because...
Well, that's always been the spine of Bafana, as you've always
mentioned.
That's
always been the spine of Bafana. And we've already seen Mokoena not playing for Sundowns. He's only been... Hugo Bruce has backed him in the national team. And yes, he's been sensational. But what does that mean moving forward? Same thing with Temba Zani. He's got a big injury on him. what does his future bode for SA football? Yes, we've created such a great national team, but Sundowns once again, mid-season coaching change. It's interesting to see what's going to lie next with from a South African context with Sundowns. There's a lot of questions, and they're not scoring goals, which is such a weird thing for Sundowns.
Which is kind of how they started the season as well. You know, that's what we said during the MTN 8.
Yeah.
But now if you look at how that's going to impact on the league, on the PSL, of course. Mm. So they're currently 21 points along with Pirates. Yeah. They both had one loss. Stellenbosch also have had one loss, but they've had more draws on 15.
Yeah.
That was going to be the sort of three-horse race there. Yeah. The six-point buffer, I know it's early days. But now Pirates looking at this going, not so bad on the continent.
And you know what,
Ben? We settled.
Yeah. And you know what, Ben? You made a big call at the beginning of the year and said Pirates are going to take it. With this coaching change, I really do think they're favorites, just purely from a stability point of view. And I think Stellenbosch run next to them in terms of a 1-2 running. Because we'd never generally see turbulence in Sundowns. Now we've seen, after they lost the cup final, that Chairman is definitely not happy about what's happening with his team. The standard is high. I think they get booted out of CAF in the group stage because the other teams are going to smell blood. And if they draw another game, all it takes is somebody to pick up a point now. And we always thought that they were going to beat AS4. They didn't do it. They basically almost lost that game. And interesting times for Sundowns.
It's just such a good point that you make there, because Man City had that aura like you can't lose. You want to open the other beer there? That was the cold one. Man City had that aura like they can't lose. They do have the losses. Suddenly there's blood in the water. Crystal Palace reckon we can get some points here. Same with Sundowns now. They're going to go into the PSL, and it's not just Pirates are going to be the team they worry about. Not just Stellenbosch are going to be the team they worry about. Magesi's already shown they could beat them. They did beat them in that cup final. And as you say, those teams in CAF are going to eat them for breakfast. Well, lots to digest. There really is a lot to digest there. But the important thing is that if you are a football fan, the festive season is going to be a beautiful thing there. So many big fixtures, of course, for all the big teams there. And we've got Champions League this week. We're going to come back after a short break and go into specifically what's happening for this weekend. Now, for many of you, December holidays might actually just start this weekend.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, it starts for you, basically, right?
Hopefully. It starts, and we hope that Man United can do the unthinkable. But, this is where...
Stop trying to make it about your team and the hopes. Anyway, take a short break. We'll come back with this weekend's big preview fixtures and things to watch out for.
Sweet. Welcome to Pep Talk, a new segment where we give completely unqualified and unsolicited advice to teams, players, and even fans on how they can get back to winning ways. And today, as the name suggests, we're starting with Pep Guardiola. You're probably wondering what an average Joe Burger with almost zero sporting talent could offer Pep by way of advice, but you'd be surprised. Firstly, and most importantly, I'd encourage him to encourage Rodri to return the Ballon d'Or to its rightful owner, Vinicius Jr., because it's become quite clear to me that City has fallen victim to the work of a Brazilian football sangoma who's cursed the citizens for their part in this gross injustice. Secondly, I do what Pep usually does and use the January transfer window to poach any and every player who's ever impressed him and start completely fresh. Because as weird as this feels to say, it seems like City's season is well and truly beyond repair. I know this was supposed to be a pep talk, and technically it was, but next time I'll try and be a bit more positive and a little less smug about City's downfall. Catch you next time.
Welcome back. Sporting weekend ahead, and it's a good one because it pretty much signifies where most people will get into the holiday mood. If you are still working, it's middle of December. It's a great time to be in South Africa. And of course, it's a great time to just have a couple of beers with your mates, watching the games. Sure, I went pretty deep in the beers last week at the golf. Now, we're going to start with some golf because the DP World Tour has a variety of sections. We're currently in the opening swing. The opening swing is really great because it goes Australia, and then it comes to South Africa for the big marquee events. Now, I know there's the SA Open, and we've got a few other co-sanctioned events over the years that have taken prominence.
Yeah.
But when you look at the international sort of pedigree and profile, it doesn't get any bigger in SA than the Nedbank Golf Challenge and the Alfred Dunhill Championship.
Yeah.
So we've just had the Nedbank being pushed forward a week.
Cool.
So that we can have a back-to-back with Leopard Creek.
Yeah.
Now, the Dunhill, there's two Alfred Dunhills in the year. There's the Lynx Championship at St. Andrews, and then this Leopard Creek one. So if you, even if you aren't a golf fan, go onto Instagram at Dunhill Links. Now just go, and this is one of those really cool things where it's a local tournament with very much international money. You know, Johan Rupert does everything great when it comes to golf, from building this golf course to the international brand that he has around Dunhill. And the coverage online on social media is phenomenal around this. The golf course is on the Kruger Park, on the Crocodile River. Oof. The scenery.
That sounds...
This course is phenomenal. If you talk to any golf pros, in the guys of the DP World Tour, pretty much majority of them say that this course is probably the best to go to for conditioning. It's an incredible test, and you're in the Kruger Park. So from a viewer spectacle this weekend, the Dunhill Links, the Dunhill Championship at Leopard Creek, it is an absolute highlight for me. I look forward to the Thursday to get that first round going. Mm. It's a great thing to watch during the whole weekend. So that's going to be a really good one. Rugby, we are back with the Investec Champions Cup. We've got
just to circle back to that, to the Dunhill Links, I see there's a lot of big names that are coming down for this one. You know, we've got Charles Schwartz.
Charles won many times there.
And Louis Oosthuizen.
Louis Oosthuizen's also been a good player there, yeah. So, you know, their relationship with Johan Rupert is such that they'll never miss his tournament. Mm. Neither of them played in the Nedbank last week.
Yeah.
They were playing out in Saudi Arabia because all the LIV guys, you know, they're trying to get world ranking points here and there so they can play the majors. So they were all in Saudi last week. But yeah, really, really big names.
Do you have some favorites that are going into that tournament?
I really don't, huh?
Because one thing with us is that we're going to get the golf favorites wrong, like we did this past weekend.
Golf is just so hard to pick. It is so incredibly hard to pick. Like, I always think a South African guy has a great chance of winning at those two events because of the heat.
Yeah.
And as I said to you, like, you said Corey Connors is the favorite to go into the NGC, to which I said he's Canadian.
Yep.
He's going to melt. Did he feature? Not really. Did he have a cool weekend? I hope so.
Yeah.
But the same goes.
I hope he enjoyed it.
But the same, yeah, so like, I'm not going to try to get into the favorites. Yeah, for me, yeah. Golf's an absolute lottery with these things.
Yep.
There are certain players, and I think the South African guys are always going to have an edge because they know the golf course too. It's such a tricky golf course. I wouldn't say Charles got the game anymore to win in a tournament like this. I just really don't think he does. I don't think Louis has the drive anyway. But last year was pretty good. Just kind of win this one.
Okay, so it's
won him Rishis.
Do you have let me let that one go. Nah. I just wanted to see if it's a sneaky one.
You know,
or a favorite that you want to watch play on this course.
If you do get me into golf, then we lose 10 minutes of our lives. Let's get into the rugby because last week in the Champions Cup it was a really rough weekend for the South African teams.
Yeah.
So they kind of get to redeem themselves this weekend. So Saturday we've got the Bulls at home, which is a huge thing right now for them. They need that desperately.
Yeah.
They're at home against Northampton. 3 o'clock kickoff at Loftus. Then we've got Leicester hosting the Sharks. So the Sharks go straight away on the road again. 7:30 against Andre Pollard's team. And then we've got Harlequins hosting the Stormers at 10 on Saturday. I see the Bulls winning that. Absolutely. Bouncing back pretty hard. As for the other teams,
I think the Sharks drop it.
What worries me about the Sharks is that they just aren't the 80-minute team. So, I mean, they were down to like 12 players in the weekend, whatever it was.
I mean, what is that discipline? Like, I mean, like...
So, my first thought when I look at the Sharks is that they were killing the Stormers. They let foot off the gas. They almost lost that game. We've seen them in the URC, Glasgow in this season. They were absolutely murdering them. Foot off the gas, came back, only won like a few points. Is this team fit enough? Or, I mean, like, because why else would players lose focus in rugby?
Too much rugby. A lot of those guys have played throughout the season, especially a lot of Springboks in that team. Age is not necessarily on that team side as well.
No, not in that forward pack anyway.
Yeah, so, you know, unlike the other teams where you can kind of see the depth coming through slowly, the Sharks have gone super top heavy. They've gone for the stars. And I think with all the rugby, all of those guys have played, it's starting to show that they're super, super tired. And they don't have an 80 minutes, you know, in them, all of those guys.
Which is kind of worrying. And again, like I've mentioned this in the last sort of four or five shows. I hate the fact that workload is becoming the biggest talking point with all of this stuff. Because we all search for answers, okay, as to why someone doesn't perform as expected or why something unexpected happens.
Yeah.
And we always just comes back to this thing about workload and doing this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's infuriating.
Or bring in the talent.
Sure.
That's okay. The one thing with the Sharks, I think we've said they're going for a pure American marketing exercise. Hey, your stars will play every single game. We don't care. Somebody came to watch Siya Kolisi today. Whereas other teams know that we're on four fronts, basically, because we've got Springboks who are playing on an international scene, and you got the two other tournaments. So we've got to bring in some talent. You can't always just play our stars. And I think that is the issue where the Sharks are
well,
are,
it'd be interesting to see what they do with that in mind of going away. Okay, so the whole thing about the Investec Champions Cup is that we were saying as well last week is that it's not always going to be strength versus strength, because sometimes you look at an away game and go, we're going to take one for the team here.
Yep.
And every team's going to do it. It's not just going to be SA teams. Mm. But it goes back to the whole thing of like, we, the bigger your squad, the stronger your Chelsea, the more you can be like a Springbok.
Once again, I think we'll give them visionary team of the year, Chelsea.
Who would have thought that come June, Chelsea would be like the biggest stars of the show, the biggest heroes. Look, in football for the weekend, there is some CAF Champions League going on there. It's like that second week, right?
Yeah,
second goes week. In little two-week
third
spurts.
Third
match day three. But we're not going to get into that because Sundowns, the biggest news there is they got a new coach.
Yeah.
Premier League for this weekend. Arsenal versus Everton straight up on Saturday at 3 o'clock. Arsenal back at home. They've been phenomenal at home. They've been really like solid, cohesive.
Cold night at Emirates.
Everything fires at home. Everton, don't see a big chance there. Liverpool, they missed out in their game against Everton. That's been postponed. They were away to Newcastle. They've now got Fulham at home.
Yep.
Can't see them losing that one. Then Man City, Man United, there's your big game. Sunday, 4:30. How do you feel? I mean, come on. Like, is this a good time of taking on Man City? Are they going to be sort of knitting together now?
It's a great time to play City, but it's still playing Pep Guardiola at the Etihad. You know, he's going through a lot right now, but he wakes up for that type of game. You know, that's a game where you don't want to lose, and you've got a new coach who wants to come, you know, bring that energy back into United. So it's going to be a beautiful clash. For some strange reason, it's feeling overhyped. So I really suspect it might be a draw.
Well.
Strange, right? I really go for it, right?
Sometimes that's the case.
Yeah, I'm
sometimes
just like,
that's the case.
It's going to be a draw. But for me, it's, I want to see what happens with Chelsea-Brentford. Because
Chelsea-Brentford 7 on Sunday. That's also a big
because
one. Because
Chelsea have been notorious to lose those type of games in previous seasons. If they win, they're and thereabouts, because we've seen that Liverpool are capable of leaking goals and dropping games and drawing unnecessarily. I think if Chelsea can get that, it changes the dynamic where they will now believe that they can win the EPL.
But this is what I love, again, as not the biggest football fan, is that there are such high stakes in all of these games now, because Liverpool cannot, even though they had a 9-point lead a week ago.
Yeah.
It's going to get cut away. The chasing pack is so hungry.
Yeah.
They're so hungry. Yeah. And then you'll have a resurgence along the line somewhere with Man City. Who knows?
Yeah.
But that's damn exciting. Look, if you are looking into the CAF Champions League for the weekend, Saturday, Pirates are taking on Stud Abidjan.
We're trying, guys.
And Sundowns will be at home. That game's at 6 o'clock on Saturday. And then Sundowns will be at home with a new setup, 3 o'clock on Sunday against Raya CA.
Yeah. Look, guys, for me, I think Sundowns have got the biggest thing to prove this in the next 2 weeks, in the next two match days, because new coach, new system, player buy-in, they have to get points. If they don't, they will ultimately be booted out of the CAF Championship in the first round. That's the big pressure. And that's the big pressure of the board in making that type of decision, because I think Mangoba could have gotten them through.
Yeah.
Because of just pure continuity. Now you bring in a new technical team and a new coach, language barrier as well.
Yeah.
Ooh.
But that's the whole thing about standards, right? As a big team, that's defined by being a big team, you got to make big team moves.
Yeah.
And they probably thought, well, fuck it, we need to get a new guy in. That wraps up for this week. The big football festive season ahead. But for this weekend, like I said, don't forget Leopard Creek. What a wonderful place. It's a great place to watch a bit of golf. There'll be lots of South African talent on the show, and there'll be a lot bunch of Europeans getting sunburnt again. And then, come on, Stormers. Come on.
Come on, guys. Give Ben one.
Get back in it, Stormers.
Jeez,
hopes
guys.
Hopes are low,
please.
But just get back in it. We've got two shows to come. Of course, we've got the On the Bounce Awards. That'll be next week. And then after that, we've got a year in review show. Look out for our social post on Friday, where we'll be giving away the Real Madrid home and away kit. Other than that, just have a lekker time watching the football and everything else that you enjoy sports-wise. Catch you back next week.